This is The Playbook. Welcome to Money Talks. I'm David Meltzer, and I am so excited because I have one of the greatest collectors in the world, and he's also a great investor himself, Josh Luber. He is the co-founder of Fanatics Collectibles and the founder of Zero Cool. Welcome to Money Talks, Josh.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's so much fun to have you on all the different shows that I do, but this is the one that I thought was geared directly to you and your core competency and experience, because there's no one that understands the timing and risk tolerance of collecting more than you. You have, in my opinion, changed the world of collecting. Anyone that can sell billions of dollars of tennis shoes, and as they call them, sneakers, and make more money off of sneakers than most people do from going to law school deserves my respect and kudos. But for you, how did the collectible awareness and understanding really evolve from, you know, most guys start as children, but not everybody can make millions of dollars and build huge businesses out of collecting?
First of all, thank you very much for the kind words. I think the answer to that is, maybe temper some of those kind words, which is that we all have the same story. You know, I am turning 45 in about a month or so. And, you know, we all grew up collecting baseball cards, and we all grew up, you know, wanting to own Air Jordans and in the age of Nike, you know, basketball advertising. And what happened was, as our whole generation got to a certain age where we had a little bit more disposable income, where we could afford that Michael Jordan rookie we couldn't afford as a kid, or we could buy those Jordans, you know, it's very a normal process to go back and want to acquire those. Well, what happened was, because at the time they weren't thought of as collectibles, they weren't thought of in the terms of supply and demand and having these rare items, you know, just the nature of that made these products worth a lot of money. Because look, this is just supply and demand at its most basic, right? Limited supply, high demand, a lot of people want it, so the value goes up. On top of that, you know, we're all, you know, capitalists and investors and business people. And so, you know, that sort of evolved over time on top of that. But this is all just us going back and buying the stuff we wanted as kids.
And that emotional attachment obviously started a lot of us into the experiential business of collecting. But some of us also moved on to gold and silver and some other traditional collectibles that they were precursors, I would say, to sure. Sneakers and cards. People have been trading gold since, you know, the gold rush. So have you been able to apply what you've learned in the collectible business, those collectibles sitting behind you, to more traditional type of collecting?
First of all, it's the inverse, right? As a starting point, right? Even as take StockX, which, you know, a lot of people look at StockX and there's a lot of superlatives for it. But at the end of the day, we just copied how the stock market worked and applied it from one set of traditional investments, like gold, for example, or other commodities, and applied it to a different set of commodities, to sneakers and streetwear and watches and handbags. So, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, this isn't new. We're really just taking those same learnings. And, you know, the flip side is, now that we've gone through a really remarkable period of time over the last 5 years, where the sort of, call it the hype economy generally, like all of these collectible consumer goods that have become investable assets, along with crypto and Bitcoin, have sort of done like this over the past year and gone up and come back down to varying degrees. And so now, I think, to your question, a lot of people are trying to go back to those sort of, you know, fundamental learnings and fundamental truths about how markets work, about how commodities, you know, work over time, and trying to get a handle on, you know, oh man, what just happened over the past couple of years? You know, I just lost 80% of my crypto wallet or the trading cards. If you came in and bought trading cards, you know, in 2021, you might be, you know, in a lot of trouble right now. So the learnings really apply both ways.
You know, it's so interesting, because one of my great mentors, he would give perceived value, but only receive real value. So he would buy liquidated items. He would buy very low on the supply and demand chart, and he would give those as gifts, you know, beautiful watches that were out, you know, out of style, or and he'd keep the retail price on it. But he would only give perceived value. And then you were so grateful for him, and it would come his birthday or the holidays, and you're like, well, what do you want? Gold coins. That's all I say, right? He goes, I don't want to jerk around with stuff. He goes, gold coins, that's what I want. So he was always trading perceived value for real value, and you know, probably has one of the greatest gold collections in the world, and has, you know, done very, very well with this simple yet powerful way. How much of collecting is perceived value, and are you capable, like gold and silver, of finding, you know, stability and real value in collectibles that have more emotional aspects to them?
Yeah. Well, look, the high level concept that you were sort of dancing around is just diversification of risk, right? And saying, hey, look, some of the products that we might want to invest in, you know, are things that are speculative or have a lot of hype right now and the value is going through the roof. Or let me also make sure I get some gold coins. Let me also make sure I get some IBM stock or whatever it is to balance that out. But, you know, all of this, you know, again, it's like the basics of how clearly this is Econ 101, right? Supply and demand. Supply is the known quantity, right? We know how many widgets a company makes or something. We know how many shares of Coca-Cola stock on the market. But demand is an unknown. Demand is an estimate. It's a forecast off of last year's sales. It's you know, so that concept of trying to understand demand and what goes into demand, right? Personal taste is a big part of it when you're dealing with collectibles. So, you know, that's why it can be so volatile where, I mean, just look at Kanye and look at, you know, how that's changed the sneaker market over the past couple of years. You know, how many people still have the same level of personal taste for Kanye today as they did a year ago, right? So, and that changes the market, that changes the value of those products.
Yeah, and coming along with that, as you stated, you're really good at applying traditional modalities and methodologies in investing to sneakers and other collectibles. One of the things I know that you were involved with was you created a fund for collectibles and just used a traditional fund in order to do so. What's the next traditional application? Is there an asset-based lending type of opportunity? Are there, you know, other aspects of traditional collecting, meaning traditional assets, that we can take advantage of utilizing more historical types of vehicles?
Yeah. So that's a really good question, because that, I believe, is going to be sort of the catalyst for all of these, call them, you know, sort of niche investment opportunities to become more mainstream. In 2018, 2019, as the trading card industry was going through sort of its own hockey stick growth, the world was coming back into it. And then really, you know, COVID was another big jolt of people coming in. Again, just supply and demand. Now you have more demand on that side. A lot of people came to the same realization, which is that trading cards, for a lot of reasons, are true investable assets. They're standardized, they're liquid. You know, there's third-party systems that validate it and grade it. There's a lot of reasons of why trading cards, more so than maybe than sneakers or collectible toys, can be true investable assets. And so then a lot of entrepreneurs went out and started to create businesses, creating a fund, there's lending businesses that have been created off of it, creating marketplaces that operate like StockX, like stock markets for it. There's fractional companies like Collectible and Rally Road that have taken that aspect of it. So any business model that you could in the finance industry can technically be applied to trading cards, as trading cards are true investable assets. The nuance of how that gets executed is the open question based on the difference between it. But it's all right there, and a lot of people have already gone down that path.
And to that same measure, mentorship. I find it so interesting, because when you and I were younger, there wasn't really mentorship when it came to collecting. But the size, scope, and scale, not only of the business, the opportunity, but also the community, is so extensive. And I still think we're very early on, that there's a lot of opportunity in mentorship and consulting in this space. And you've utilized some of the biggest business names in America to mentor you in the application of traditional business into collecting. You yourself, I know, are so gracious in mentoring so many people. How important do you think this consultative mentoring side of the collecting business is going to be over the next 10 years, for example?
Well, you know, it's interesting that, you know, using the term mentorship as opposed to you know, the sort of more one-way street of you know, working for someone and learning for them, because, you know, mentorship is a very much a two-way street, as you know, as both parties are learning from each other. You know, I started StockX, and one of my partners in that business was Dan Gilbert, who's obviously the founder of Quicken Loans and owner of the Cleveland Cavaliers and most of the city of Detroit. And when I got there in mid-2015, Dan had half the people around him were under 23. And I realized what was going on, which was that Dan was very, very deliberate about understanding what's going on in the next generation of consumers, the next generation of customers. And so there's a lot of that goes both ways. And, you know, as much as, you know, there's zero chance that I could have built StockX or Fanatics Collectibles without Dan or Michael Rubin, you know, I think in a lot of ways, you know, I was the subject matter expert for them and they were the business matter expert and to help me build these large companies. But, you know, it's a very much mentorship's a two-way street. And I think that generation who already are the billionaires, who already are the super successful entrepreneurs, they got there for a reason because they're smart and they're curious and they want to keep learning about what's next. And so I was fortunate to sort of now be in the middle of that.
Yeah, and you have moved from StockX to obviously Fanatics Collectibles and even Zero Cool. What was that transition or interest in Zero Cool as you keep evolving in your understanding of not only the business, but the traditional pragmatic tools that make the Rockefellers, for example, and their family bank still powerful today, and Vanderbilt and all his wealth not so powerful today. What, you know, application are you utilizing with Zero Cool from that evolution and co-mentorship or internship mentorship relationships?
Well, it's interesting because Zero Cool could possibly be the product that that opens up that you know, that sort of information flow for a lot of people, because the idea, or at least the original idea of Zero Cool, was to be a trading card brand for non-sports, for culture, for all the most important, influential people in the world other than athletes, which would include, by the way, business people, scientists, teachers, you know, philanthropists, you know, not just musicians and artists and fashion designers, but the whole gamut. And that was really the idea behind Zero Cool and the creation of it, which we did concurrently with working with Michael Rubin and Fanatics to acquire the licenses and build Fanatics Collectibles on the primary side. You know, I left Fanatics Collectibles towards the end of last year, October, November. The company got so big so quickly. I mean, it was frankly, couldn't have imagined that scale. And so I've now gone back to, you know, I'm now working on my next startup, which unfortunately we're not breaking any news here. So, you know, Zero Cool is still with Fanatics Collectibles and hopefully they continue that idea, because I do think that the idea of having trading cards of the most successful business people in the world and the most successful philanthropists and teachers, you know, helps in a lot of different ways for that point.
Yeah, I think it also creates a legacy. So if you could have, you know, a Sadhguru card or a Gary V. David Meltzer combo card, you know,
right. It
works for me. And I certainly, we had Jason Kuntz on and we were talking about, you know, poker player cards. And
100%. You
know, I personally believe that Revenge of the Nerds changed our perspective of superheroes, and it certainly has helped people like you and I in our careers, as well as people ask for our autograph and our picture. And I'm still, every time I think that movie, when anyone asks for my picture, I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. This is so,
yeah.
It's such an amazing role. What should people in the collecting business, let's finish up with timing and risk tolerance. You know, I always tell people the number one rule about collecting for me is know your timing and risk tolerance. Know if it's going to be a quick flip, you can analyze that difference, or know if you're going to be giving this to your grandkids when you make the initial investment. What are some of the aspects for timing and risk tolerance, either as you start businesses? I know we're not going to break the news of your new company today, but there has to be some things you're looking at timing and risk tolerance when you start a business or make an investment in a collectible.
Yeah. Well, you know, from an investment standpoint, collectibles present an interesting nuance because the ecosystem around it is still being developed. You know, as we mentioned earlier, the different businesses in the financial, you know, investment sector are still being created. So a lot of those opportunities aren't necessarily there yet, or they're, you know, there's more liquidity that's coming. There's more businesses that are out there because each time, you know, people do that, it brings more collectors in, it brings more investors in, and those markets become more liquid. You know, collectibles, they're not fully financial assets and they're not fully consumer goods. They sit in the middle of this product that's some of both. And as, you know, StockX is a good example of a marketplace that was created for these products that sit at the intersection of that. And so, you know, understanding that, that we're still very early in the overarching industry is important in understanding the timing of the investment. Because, you know, look, you can get in there and flip trading cards all day, and or you could just sit on it and hold it all day. But the whole industry doesn't have enough information historically to really understand that. So I always tell anybody that's going down that path is, hey, look, start by buying what you like. Start by saying, hey, look, if this doesn't become fully this side into a financial asset, that it's a consumer good that you like, that you want. You know, I'm from Philadelphia. The first cards I were buying were, you know, Embiid rookies and Iverson rookies and, you know, everything else. And then you evolve as you learn more and more and start figuring that and build that into your time horizon.
Yeah, that type of visionary aspect to collecting, as well as practical intellect and business acumen, has made you one of the godfathers of collecting, whether it be trading cards, whether it be, you know, trinkets behind you that are worth a fortune, sneakers, or even, don't forget that Dave Meltzer and Gary Vee card that's coming out.
We joke, but it'll be there. 100% it'll be there. Absolutely.
I can't wait. We'll make sure that I'm trading my Warren Moon cards for the Dave Meltzer cards. We'll be right all over that. Anyway, you can make a lot of money as a business and have a lot of fun with your passion. And you also can help a lot of people, because these are revenue streams that the masses can participate in. And as you know, with blockchain and some other things, fractionalized ownership, everybody can participate, even in a multi-million or hundreds of millions of dollars in collectibles today through traditional ways of investing. Josh, thank you for leading the way. I know, please promise me you'll come back when we finally can announce your new business. I'm sure 100%. Every way you keep stepping it up one notch everywhere he goes. If you want to learn about collecting, if you want to learn about collectibles, you have to follow Josh Luber. He has the experience, acumen, and the passion for it. One of the leaders, like I said, a godfather of collectibles. Josh Luber, thanks so much for joining me here on Money Talks.